Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's Thursday, April 7th. Getting a little cloudy in LA. We're expecting a few days of rain, believe it or not, after the summer started. Kelsey's not here yet. She's on her way, stuck in traffic. But I do have a very special guest in the studio. Mr. George Daniels, welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you so much, Sam.
Yes, and thank you for being early. Like I told you before, some people are not.
My wife trained me very well.
Really? Yeah. How long have you been married?
We're going in 23 years.
Wow. Wow. Congratulations.
For real.
Yeah, right? That's a long time, but yeah. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Everybody manages to do that. Today, 2 years is a long time.
I'm telling you, right? But see, I learned how to say yes, dear, a long time ago.
There you go. You see, at this point in your life, you could probably teach people some lessons, right?
Yeah.
So I understand you're visiting us from out of town, right?
Yeah, from Chicago.
You're from Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Have you lived there all your life?
No, well, actually, I was born in New York, in the Bronx, but I got to Chicago at a younger age. My brother became my guardian when I was starting seventh grade.
Really?
So I wound up in Chicago in 1959.
Wow. And how old was he at the time?
My brother was, 26?
Oh, okay.
Younger than that. He was in medical school. At the time, married, had one child.
Yeah. So he was in a position to take care of you.
Yeah.
And what happened with your parents?
It was just family issues. And
really?
My two sisters and, of course, my brother, they had moved and my mom and dad split.
Uh-huh.
And so
I see. So you needed a guardian and there you go with your brother.
Yeah.
Did you have a good childhood?
Oh, very good.
Yes, really?
Hi.
Yeah, Kelsey is in, so we're just like. So
I'm here, guys.
He
I'm
got
here.
Distracted. He's like, "Who's this beautiful creature walking in here?"
Exactly.
You see, I can read a man's mind. Yeah, you totally distracted him.
Yeah.
So your brother was your guardian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kelsey, this is George Daniels.
Hello.
And he's
visiting
from Chicago.
Oh, great!
And you brought a friend, or who is he? Drew.
Drew.
Is he a friend of yours?
Yes.
A friendly
associate, like. A godson, if you will.
Nice.
Every time I come out here, if I need something or need to get somewhere, he makes sure I get to where I need to be on time.
Really?
Nice. So,
but this is not family, it's friends?
Yes.
Oh, wow. How cool.
Yeah.
We're talking about Drew, who's not in the studio for a moment. He stepped out for just a second and he doesn't want to talk, but I thought I'd bring him up because you're visiting.
Yes.
Right. If you are. I would imagine you've been in L.A. before,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I came out last night. Was the premiere of the new movie, Barbershop.
So last night?
Yeah.
Wow.
Was it Man's Chinese Theater?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
It was
so
there.
They had a big opening.
Oh, great big opening. And big after party and what have you. The whole cast was there. You know, uh-huh. Ice Cube, Cedric the Entertainer, Lamar and Morris.
Wow.
With Dion Cole, Common, Nicki Minaj, Regina Hall.
I must say, Margo you look very Bingham. Dapper, by the way.
Well, thank you, my lady.
Yeah, very get the dapper. Compliment from her. It's a big deal, right? There you go. How are you, Kelsey?
I'm good.
Yeah, what
I'm
happened?
Good. There was like, it was backed up for ages on the 101 at the Woodman exit, which is never like that. I mean, it's
usually maybe
just,
they blocked an exit before or something.
Well, they did. That was the thing. It was crazy. So everybody was like trying to find an alternative route, and I was like, should I do it? Should I stay? I don't know. But anyways, I made it.
Okay, you made it. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
So this was a premiere of Barbershop 2, I understand.
No,
right?
This no? Barbershop. This is the third installment.
Oh, this is the third one.
And, you know, they were all filmed in Chicago and based on Chicago's, background historically, if you will.
Mm.
And so they've gone through these different episodes. And this was with the final cut, is called Barbershop, the final cut.
Final cut.
And it was actually this one. They sent for me, and I had a little cameo in it, so it was pretty cool.
Oh, that's so fun.
Gives it a little Chicago flavor.
Yeah. Right.
So it's a trilogy, essentially.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But then each time it it deals with things that are current. Mm-hmm. So things in Chicago with the violence, it was relating to that and
really?
The young people. Oh. And so it had humor, but a serious side and a nice ending. Finally, you know,
really?
You get movies. Yeah. You know, and I can appreciate Ice Cube and the whole staff, the way they do these productions and what have you. And for me to watch him grow into such not only just a great artist, but an actor as well as a businessman.
Yeah, because you saw him early on,
oh,
right?
Yeah, well,
early on and stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm a retailer by profession of
really?
Music stores in Chicago.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was like the small version of Tower Records back in the day. George's Music Room in Chicago. Actually, I still have a location, and it's in the airport, Midway Airport in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
but, I mean, is there still room for music retailers to exist? I mean, it's very difficult now, right?
There's no doubt about it. In the mid-90s, I was actually a spokesperson for close to 30,000 urban stores in the country.
Really?
Wow. We had organizations and what have you. You know, hip-hop music really changed the game so much. And the power of retail at that time, because who knew this music would be the music that changed everybody's
That's
attitude.
True. It was new.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I remember when it was all independent. I mean, they were independent mm-hmm. distributors. Many of the artists were selling it themselves. And but when it really got the attention of the masses, then the majors wanted to get in on the action.
Yeah.
And so they were literally buying these artists from independent distributors.
Really?
Yeah. That's
wow.
How it
so they
before.
They yeah. realized it was going to be oh, yeah. successful music.
Yeah. What you had executives that were really ignoring it. Mm-hmm. In those days, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, even the 90s, they had many urban music conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Jack the Rapper, BRE, Broadcast Radio Exclusive, actually based out of L.A.
Really?
Yeah, Sidney Miller. And then you had Urban Network, The Impact. All these were trade conferences.
Oh, but,
you know, radio and records. And retail was not really included except when I showed up and I started a movement.
Wow. Ah.
Oh, that's yeah. amazing. Yeah. So how did you get into that? I mean, you obviously probably were into music all your life, right?
Well, who wouldn't be? I mean, you grow up, you hear it, you know, and... In that era, those eras, I mean, this is your entertainment.
Right.
You know,
so you grew up on rock and roll and Motown and stuff, right?
Well,
in the 60s.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. 59 is when you moved.
And I moved. But music, you know, I remember it from being a young child.
That's right.
In New York,
yeah.
You had radio stations that were geared towards black music. And then you had radio stations geared toward pop music, then rock and roll. And so each genre had its own station.
Right.
And then within the urban radio stations in those days, you would literally hear three or four genres of black music in the day. Blues, jazz, gospel.
Really?
On the same station. Yes.
Oh, wow.
And in Chicago, it was WVON. Which now is a talk radio station.
Really?
And it's black owned, and it's WVON stood for Voice of the Negro.
Oh really? My gosh. Wow.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and so it was one of the most powerful stations for black music in the country, and it was only 1,000 watts.
Really? And that was in Chicago?
Yes, 1450 wow. AM. And do you remember something they should have done when they did the movie, but Cadillac Records? You know, the movie with Beyonce, and she played Etta James.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It was called Cadillac Records. Cadillac Records was a depiction of Chess Records in Chicago. Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, The Dells, and so on and so forth. Well, not only did Leonard and Phil Chess own that record label, they also owned WVON.
Really?
Yes, they did.
So wow! So they had a big control over the music and stuff.
There you go.
Right?
That's why they became one of the most powerful stations in urban music. Actually, Barry Gordy used to bring the music down to Chicago from Detroit.
Really?
Himself.
Wow.
Oh yeah, back in the days. And
that's the head of Motown Records.
The founder, what have you? And so, my first job at Chess Records, I used to clean up the studios.
Really?
And I used to drive Etta James.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
So this is how you get started.
That was my introduction into making a payday, if you will. And but one thing led to another as time had gone on, and I opened my first record store in 1969.
Wow.
On the west side of Chicago.
What a year that was, huh?
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
So how did you decide to open a record store?
Well, as time moved on, after leaving Chess, I wound up working for a record distributor, a one-stop, if you will, wholesaler, that sold to record stores. And in doing that, I wound up dealing with all of these mom-and-pop stores. Mm. You know, I'd take their order, pull the order, and deliver the order. And so there's an attachment started because these are family-owned businesses. And you really get to know them. And, you know, you deliver the records. The unique thing, Fridays and Saturdays, it would be busy as heck in these stores because that was your entertainment.
Yeah.
And so you see it, and you wind up getting behind the counter and helping them out to sell the music. So over the years, one thing led to another. At one point, I was selling records wholesale out of the trunk of my car.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I had like 300 accounts.
Wow.
No
yes,
way.
Selling 45.
And hey, you can move it anywhere.
I'm telling you.
Right? One location gets bad,
exactly.
On you go.
Well, with the small stores, you have to remember, you had like Lee and Bob's Cleaners and Records.
Right. So, oh, wow.
Sonny's TV Repair and Records.
And Records, yeah. Really?
And, so, and that would be the place that maybe had 50 nails with the 50 top 50 45s.
Oh, wow. That's so
that's
cool.
What I would have in my car.
Wow.
And so I would visit these stores maybe two or three times a day.
Yeah.
You know, they might buy 3 45s, send 10 45s, so, but in the run of a day,
I made
a pretty good living.
Yeah.
Wow,
you know,
that's
then,
awesome.
So. Yeah. Now, Kelsey, you grew up in the internet age. Have you ever been to a record store? Because they don't have them anymore. Have you ever been to a record store?
You know what? I don't think I have.
Right.
No.
And, you know, there were vinyls when I was a kid, and you'd go to the record store, and they'd have, like, a listening station, right, that you put headphones on
and
listen to samples of
that
the album.
So cool. Yeah.
Because you couldn't know what music
you,
it would have
want.
On it, exactly, what you're buying.
Right.
So can you imagine now going to a record store and listening to
it?
We have everything on our iPad today.
Yeah, exactly.
And our iPhone. And
but
we don't need record stores.
Well, people still they still have an affinity to have something
for the
physical.
Packaging,
they
right?
Do.
Right.
Yeah.
And then,
no, they do.
Now, here in L.A., you guys have one of the last big record stores. I think they have 6 of them on the West Coast. Was it Amoeba?
Amoeba Records, right?
Yeah,
right.
That's a record store.
It is.
And it's a big store. That's what you call a superstore back in the days. And it's just amazing. You know, it's still a need for it and a desire for it. People like to be sold.
Yeah.
People do
and,
like that.
And they like to browse music
It's a social environment. I mean, you know, over the years with the stores that I've had, so many people have met, become friends because they meet up on Friday or Saturday, hang out at the store, and you know, your personnel would be familiar with the music, and you know, camaraderie would start.
Yeah.
And it's just like today on the internet. You go to iTunes, you buy 2 or 3 songs.
Right.
After that, they got the pattern on you. And
yeah,
they start
yeah,
making
those
true. Suggestions. It's the same thing we do at retail.
Yeah.
And like now, with my store in the airport, I have CDs. Physical product.
Yeah.
And people are surprised, but I carry the classics.
That's awesome.
You know, like Prince, I would have maybe 7 or 8 titles on him. Mm. Marvin Gaye, 9 or 10. Michael Jackson, so on and so forth.
Merle Haggard died. I know that's not your... You heard about that, right?
Oh, yeah, I sure
did.
Oh,
gosh, I was so sad. I love Merle Haggard.
Really?
Yeah, I'm from Texas. And
So
what part of Texas?
San Antonio.
Oh, yeah, I have a family in San Antonio.
Really?
And Houston, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, now... But it's hard to deny, though, that the digital revolution has overtaken everything because, and look, it makes sense to me, like, you know, with books, too, although I'm a big reader and I love physical books.
Yes.
But everything is moving to digital, the same with newspapers, magazines, and everything. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense, you know, because the distribution part, the manufacturing, the distribution, the retailing, the wholesaling, adds a lot to the price. Mm-hmm. It makes it difficult to get it to the consumer.
Well, at least it has a price.
Right.
Nowadays, everything is free.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this is where you lose it.
Hard.
Well, where's the value?
Right.
I mean, you know, it's just like you have artists now that are giving their music away because they have other revenue streams. And see, so the transition came when Napster showed up.
Yes.
And so that whole process has changed it. It's changed the quality of the music.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that some of the best music, especially soul music, is coming from Europe. It's coming from London.
Wow.
Adele.
Right.
Remember Amy Winehart?
Yes.
There's Sam Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That's soul music.
Really?
Yeah. That's not R&B. Oh. That's soul music, what they bring.
Yeah.
And if you listen to them, you know, where are the Aretha Franklins of today?
Yeah.
Totally.
There's one, I will tell you, Fantasia.
Yeah.
Out of all of those reality shows,
uh-huh.
She's one of the only ones, no matter what she sings, you know it's her.
Yeah.
And really?
That's
she was on American Idol or something?
Yes, yeah. She won it. But the unique thing of what I'm saying is that who has an identity now? Mm. Is it the artist or is it the producer?
Right.
How many years did we go through T-Pain?
Yeah.
Everybody sound like T-Pain. Now right. Everybody sound like Drake.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's so Lil true.
Wayne. And this is what has happened. And people are, you know, I was at like the after party. Then I went to the after party.
Oh!
and
he knows how to party.
Oh, yeah. And I just watched everybody, you know, it's of course a younger adult crowd. All night long, the same beat.
Oh, I know.
Really?
Yes.
Well. And look, I know the same beat from when the JBs did it. That must be what they meant, because it's the same beat all night long.
Wow. You would go crazy in the club. Oh, my gosh. No.
Well, I'd go because I want to see what young people are doing.
Right.
But where are the slow jams?
I know. They're nowhere.
You know, everything you know is so open and so provocative. You know, you... How can you be cool at a club when they're backing it up on you?
Yeah, no, you're right. You can't. I know.
Exactly. But it's become so normal.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But, you know, it's just like you were saying, you know, everything is digital. Even your brain is digital now.
Yeah, right.
And so it's being programmed to, you know, react to the music.
Right.
And like you said,
now I understand a lot of the hits of today are written by Swedish people. Mm-hmm. There's a company, I totally forgot, I read like a whole book about this, and they make the records for everybody today.
Well, actually, they're doing the remixes. They're creating the beats. It's just like EDM music. Mm-hmm. You know what that is?
No.
EDM? Electronic dance music.
Oh, electronic dance music. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, which is a direct derivative of something that was created in Chicago called house music.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. House music came out of Chicago as well, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, so
very influential.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, very interesting. Mm-hmm. We're talking to George Daniels, those of you just joining us. He just completed you had a cameo part in Barbershop 3, right?
Yeah.
Which is the final cut.
Yeah, but you got to watch. If you blink, you're going to miss me, but I'm
What about the first ones? Did you have roles?
Yes, I did. I had. Really? If you add them all together, it might be 25 seconds.
Really?
That's okay.
But at least you can say, hey, I've been in the, you know, in Barbershop.
Well, you know, I'm honored to be remembered because I was asked to do this by Ice Cube himself.
Yeah.
Oh,
and so, again,
great.
It goes back to relationships with all of the artists over the years that did their first in-stores at my store.
Right.
And so I met them as teenagers.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, did you play yourself in the movie or did you have a role?
No, not even a role. It was
just
looking like George Daniels. Everybody said, oh, you know,
it's
so funny in the theater, you know, when it pops up, George, and then it's gone.
That's funny, yeah. But that's cool to still be associated with stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, after all of these years and still figure out a way to stay relevant, if you will. And so it's pretty cool, and the respect that I get from all of the artists and young people in general, I'm honored and humbled by how I'm received and treated. And it's, again, that's a direct reflection of my dad, the way he always treated and the way he taught me to communicate with people.
Wow, very interesting, very nice. Did you grow up in a big family? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Well,
you have
a brother. I was the youngest, so I was literally like, you know, the only child at the time. Because by the time I came around, my sisters and my brother, they were getting ready to become adults.
Oh wow.
So I was
big
the youngest.
Yeah.
But I have tons of cousins and so on and so forth. Actually, my niece, my brother's youngest daughter, is an actress here in Los Angeles. Her name is Paula Newsom.
Uh-huh.
And she's done a number of movies and what have you.
Nice.
So she's very talented. So I have roots in L.A. too.
Yeah, you do.
So you have a creative family.
Oh, yeah, very much so. My brother, the dentist, he still plays saxophone.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah, and a quick story. My father wanted me to play sax so bad because he knew my mother loved the saxophone. Uh-huh. He bought me an alto and a tenor. And I looked at that. I said, okay, I'm like 12 years old. And the mistake he made, you know, like the Apollo in New York, the Apollo Theater in Chicago was the Regal Theater. And my dad sent me to see Miles Davis at 12 years old.
Really?
I came out of there and I had to play a trumpet.
Oh.
Really?
That's what I played.
Yeah.
I wanted, there was no way I would want to play anything else.
Anything but the trumpet.
And that's why I tell parents and, you know, relatives of kids, expose them to it early.
Yeah.
Let them determine it. But just by seeing it, they'll want to do it.
Right. And let them decide what instrument,
exactly.
too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. by exposure, if you take them to see opera.
Right.
You know, they may become interested in singing like that.
That's true.
Rather than singing like Nicki Minaj or something.
Right.
But not
right.
that that's bad, but
right.
the thing, you know,
it's
you
different.
Know, our children need more diversity, and they're not getting enough diversity today in their entertainment
right.
and music.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, I mean, you hear, and all the music is the same, or at least to us it sounds
no,
like
no,
it.
No, it's the
they
same.
They just like it, you know?
I tell you, it's the same
beat. It's the same because it's the same people writing it.
Exactly. Well, it's called emulation.
Yeah.
You know, imitating. Back in the day, if you sound like somebody else, radio wouldn't play you.
Really? Mm-hmm.
But think about it. If you look back from Elvis Presley to Nat King Cole to Frank Sinatra to Aretha Franklin, Gladys Knight, look at Motown.
Right.
You had all of those groups under one roof, and none of them sounded like.
Sounded alike.
They really don't.
As a matter of fact, if you put a, back in the day, you'd put a 45 record on, put the needle on it, before the artist starts singing, you knew that, oh, that's Marvin Gaye's music.
Really?
Oh, that's Smokey and the Miracles.
Yeah.
They had, and this is what it was, and radio determined it.
Really?
You know, you go into a station, you know, record day, and you know, you see the program, and they say, oh, I like that ring. You know, is it in the stores? No. Well, when you put it in the stores, I'll play it.
Really?
Because they used to want their listeners
to be able to buy
whatever they heard.
Right.
And again, the business changed the game because of the big mass merchandisers and what have you. Because back in the day, it was no such thing as release day. You know, a standard release day, like Tuesdays became.
Right.
That was because of the big box retailers. They wanted a level playing field.
Mm.
And so they started changing the game. It's just like, you know, when they throw the trailers on television for a movie, they're looking for first weekend sales.
Right, exactly.
And records, when they started playing a record that you couldn't buy, this is what started hurting retail, and that's what gave an opening for bootleggers.
Really?
because if you couldn't get
it. If you couldn't get
they,
it, somebody
would get it. I mean, the same way with the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still out. They still show up at the barbershop with those films. But that's what happened, and when you play something so often and so much and you can't buy it, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
But this is what happened to the business.
Yeah. Wow,
they
amazing.
They took the thrill out of it. I mean, if I heard something, I used to have customers pull up to the store and say, hey, George, it's on the radio right now. We turn it on, boom, here it is. That's how, and you know. But now, again, with technology, it doesn't matter. You don't have to leave your bed.
Yeah,
to get the music. it's not fun.
George Daniels, the founder of George's Music Room. How many stores did you have?
About four.
Four of them?
At different times. But it was really weird. It was, you know, it was an experiment by a young guy. You know, all of it was an experiment. My first store, I talked the landlord into giving me 90 days credit on the rent.
No way! Oh,
I went to a wholesaler.
Hey, should have been a salesman. Yeah. You knew it right away.
I bought six albums, 145s. I brought my record player from home.
Wow!
December 12th, 1969.
And that's how you started
George's Music.
Whoa!
Amazing.
So it was a good timing, though, right?
I get those questions quite often, you know, what was your plan? You know, how did you decide to do this, what have you? You don't. When you're young, you just do it.
You just do it, right? Because you want to. You have
to. The greatest asset that I had was, like I was saying, when I delivered records to those stores and to see how you really operate. So I had all the knowledge. The only thing I lacked was the funding.
Yeah.
And see, so I made up for that.
Story of my life. I'm like, everybody just give me $1 million.
Yeah, exactly.
And exactly. And you think that'll work. But what happens is just like in the recording business.
Uh-huh.
You know, many times you have enough money to get started. But only enough to win, because if you lose, it's done.
Yeah. Isn't that true?
And, and it takes the same amount of money to make a hit record as it does a failure.
Yeah.
Know your market, know your marketplace, your target audience, and that's what you shoot for.
Right. You know, but the question is that like, doesn't that commercialize the music? Like, in other words, you're writing something in order for people to buy it. So, like, I'll make whatever they want rather than the music that I want to make.
Well, this is what has happened.
Oh.
This is what you just described.
Okay.
And it's technology. It's like you were talking about that 3D printer.
Right.
Where you could just... You know, just make stuff and make it look like a Picasso, and it's not. You know?
Yeah,
but you punch Picasso in that dog of 3D printer, and look what you're going to get.
Right.
And see, so there's no effort in it. Technology does all the work. You have so many artists. If you turned off that auto tunes, they couldn't sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You know, that sounds awful. That auto tune.
Well,
thing.
But
yeah.
It is. It's a beat pattern, and the brain. You know, when you're dealing with young people and as time is going on, you have to remember the game Pac-Man?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. Remember that thing? The start of that sound.
Really?
And this is the beginning of the trend with electronic music and what it is now with the auto-tunes, with the voice-shaping technology. Everybody basically sounds alike.
Right.
You know?
And then they call it sampling when they steal somebody else's music and do like rap or music over it and stuff. And you go, I've heard the song before, you know, but different.
That's been going on for years. You know, another note of some history, the first artist that created the genre of getting releases for sampling was Biz Markie.
Uh-huh.
The hip-hop artists, you know, that Yo Gabba Gabba that come to the children's show? Well, Biz Markie was the first artist to do that, and he got sued.
Oh.
Because I think it was a Gershwin song, something off of Broadway.
Yeah.
And they said, no. So they had to pull that album back.
Really?
And then re-release it.
Yeah.
And so that was the beginning.
Yeah, but how do they allow this to happen now? I mean, I thought maybe they pay them or something.
Oh, they do pay.
They do.
Yeah.
Oh, they have to pay to.
Well, you know, many have recently, wasn't it Pharrell and Robin Thicke with Marvin Gaye?
Right.
See, so it happens quite often, unless it's a big artist or what have you. It never really hits the media, but it's going on every single day.
Yeah.
Where you sampled my music or you know, stole it, if you will, and didn't pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It's not necessary. I mean, because when you think there's like a million songs that have been written, and most of them are not the same, you know, and you go, wow, we still can write new songs that haven't been written yet, you know. So the thing is to go in and just, it's like when you take somebody else's music, it's the shortcut, it's the easy way out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, you know, every time you take a shortcut, sometimes you wind up getting cut short.
There you go.
But it's just like when I'm looking at the technology here that you guys are using, and what young musicians or producers use is... As small as this, when you have those big boards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And see, so it's real easy. You know, they got programs where with the most samples, you know, the records with the most samples, and all you have to do is just pull it up. You just sit there and you create music from everybody else's music.
Yeah.
And so it's never yours.
Right.
And you and these lyrics that are just created so they rhyme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, and this is the new age, but.
Yeah.
You know, just like you were making mention of the way I dress, and I do this intentionally, but I was raised to dress that way. And I go to the clubs, and you know, I get compliments from the hip-hop crowd, if you will. And they say, wow, man, you really always look different, and so on. So. And I say, yeah, why do all of y'all look alike? I mean, it's where's the individuality?
Yes.
And the same thing is a reflection in the music. Right. Who are you? Yeah. Who is your signature? You know, if Al Green sang a Luther Vandross song, you know it's Al Green.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's very interesting.
And so this is...
Yeah, and that happens a lot where people sing other people's songs, and it turns out very good. You know, I like it.
It does. The key would be to make it yours.
Yeah.
You know, don't sing it and sound like Aretha. Put your own take on it, but we know
it's true.
It's an Aretha song. We all know it's song.
So we don't want someone to sound like Aretha doing Aretha's song.
Back in the day, that wasn't even allowed.
Yeah.
Now, you may go to a club, you know, they call it karaoke now, but years ago, every club had a house band. I mean, there was I don't care where you were in America.
Yeah.
They had house bands, and you had musicians and artists. In Chicago, it was an amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know, to go into clubs, and you'd see Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and, mm-hmm. and these artists that were just everyday folks.
Yeah.
You know, these were the years when, if you're at the Apollo in New York, you were there for 5-6 days, and you did 5 shows a day. That's how entertainment used to be.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how you make a living.
Yeah.
But remember, the songs are only 2 minutes 30 seconds long.
Yeah.
That's true.
It weren't no remixes.
Right. Now, the reason they keep songs short is like attention span, right? Because, I mean, there's obviously great songs that go on for 8 minutes or something.
Yeah, well.
But for radio, they can't play the long ones, right?
Well, it started with Isaac Hayes. The
long really?
Version, yeah. The album called Hot Butter Soul.
Uh-huh.
By the time I get to Phoenix and I Stand Accused, and these were the songs that kind of changed and broke the mold because radio wouldn't play a record that was over 3 minutes long.
Right.
Because they had so many parts within an hour to play music and to sell some air, advertising
okay.
time. And so they would not... You know, playing. And that's why you look at all the old 45s,
right?
And they were under 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And if you wanted to get a long version, you get the album.
Exactly.
Right.
If they were a long version, and then like today, you know, the intro is so long.
Yeah, right.
You know, you got to put that hook at the beginning if you want to keep the listener.
Right.
It's like when I sell music, I'm gonna put the best 2 records on off of that album.
Yeah.
Before I play the whole darn album.
That's true.
Because I know what's hot.
Exactly.
And what's going to get you. And this is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not being done anymore. It's,
yeah, I know.
You know, when the industry stopped making singles, when it's always been a singles business, now it's iTunes.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but it's only, you know, it's physical product is still quite prevalent.
That's nice to know.
Yeah.
You know, that's very encouraging to know. And like I said, I think the most important reason, well, people like the physical, they like the album art.
Exactly.
They like things like that. They they like to display it under, you know, whatever, to show all the CDs. Yeah, I'm like that with books, you know, and I can understand that. And so maybe there's going to be like a resurgence.
Oh, it's definitely a resurgence in vinyl. I mean, you can go to stores like Urban Outfitters and they have vinyl.
I know,
right?
I saw that the other day.
And you can find record players. There was a time you couldn't find any anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well, there was a time they weren't as obvious, but you could always find that stuff. You can find your old Pioneer amp with tubes in it if you want. But like you were saying earlier about the technology, whether it in print and what have you, what technology has done has just dissolved so many jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it also created new ones, you know. We have to think
new
about
ones,
that.
With these new artists?
No. I'm talking in general, not just about music, but in general. And, but I mean, look, so maybe you did away with the job, but then there'd be a new job for someone who does the digital
like
work,
programming,
you know? Right.
Yeah.
But things like that. So it's not, I think things have just changed.
There's no doubt that it's changed, but, you know, as much as they change, they still remain the same.
Yeah.
It's when you look at mechanization, automation, and so on and so forth, sure, it changed and jobs were lost, but not at the rate this technology has done.
Wow.
Again, look what you have right there, that 3D printer thing.
Right.
Oh, my God. You know, behind this, you know, how many people, you know, aren't pressing records, the pressing plants. If you remember back during the days of Columbia Record Club, you know, where you can get 15 albums
for a penny or something.
Oh my God.
You remember? But then you'd have to buy them every month.
But it was
full price.
It was a huge pressing plant in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Wow.
That did all of that pressing and what have you. And then you have shipping and all kinds of handlers. Yeah. That are just in the music end of a technology that's gone.
Yeah.
That's gone. And so it's like in the print media.
Right.
Many jobs, they're just not there anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
See, so then, the middle income type jobs. So.
Yeah. I know. The layout of the land as far as the economy and stuff, it's changed quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had to get used to it, you know, but there's a lot of positive things to it, obviously. You know, like when you think with technology, I think some of the best, the people that benefit the most are like the old people, the handicapped that can't leave their house, you know. And now you brought the whole world to them on computers, you know. So those are beneficiaries of technology and stuff, you know. and, like and your, a lot of like, other people,
like,
you know?
Like LA Talk Radio.
Right.
I know. Mean,
this wouldn't have existed without the internet.
Without the technology, yeah. Of course, because you'd have to have such a big mechanism with a huge antenna
and all that stuff. Yeah, I know. Yeah, and you'd only be local and things like that. Today we can be global.
All over the world.
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah?
It is. It is. So we get fans everywhere, you know? That's if only I can find a woman or a wife somewhere else in the world, I'd be happy.
Oh, God.
I ain't getting in that. I'm
gonna you will.
That, sound like, that sounds like a song.
Yeah,
that,
I know.
There's some lyrics to that.
I know. Well, you know. You need to find him somewhere. But no, that's cool. We're talking to George Daniels. He's visiting L.A. from Chicago. You were here for the premiere of Barbershop Final Cut. Yeah. Is the movie coming out this week? Or
The 15th.
The 15th?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes,
very
so
cool.
Yeah.
What's the movie about? I mean, it's like, well, obviously Barbershop, but what is it like? People talking about things? Things happening there?
You know, the Barbershop.
Uh-huh.
In the hood, if you will, in the neighborhood, it's the place. I mean, it's
where everybody gets together, right?
Well, it's a sacred place.
Really?
Now, this particular version of Barbershop includes a beauty salon.
Oh.
And it's all interconnected.
Gossip right. Central Station.
Exactly. So you see, how can I say? It's like a soap opera.
Okay.
You have different stories within the big picture.
Right.
You know, the different couples and so on and so forth, the neighborhood, the kids, and like Cuba's dealing with, the violence that's being so recognized coming out of Chicago.
Yeah.
It's not that it's not violence every place else, but I think the camera's on Chicago so heavily because that's the home of the president.
Right.
Just
yeah.
my
yeah,
thoughts.
That's true.
And but the movie is a reflection of what's going on in Chicago.
Wow.
And it's you know, it has a younger cast, a few youngsters in it that are really talented young kids.
Really?
And then is this, veteran actors.
Mm-hmm. And does this take place today, like in the present?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's the whole development of the franchise,
right.
if you will.
Yeah. But it must have done pretty well if they come out with a third movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Second
yeah,
sequel and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. So now, are you like into acting at all, too? I mean, if you get like acting parts, would you take them?
Yes, I would. I act every day.
Yeah.
Life is nothing but a stage.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's true.
I think they should do a documentary on you. Oh. That'd be great.
Yeah. Now, have you ever considered performing? Like, I mean, you've got your trumpet and everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Have you performed?
No.
No?
No, I've just found my way in selling it and not singing it.
Right. Yeah, that's but, yeah, good. But yeah. I mean, but you definitely understand the music
oh,
business.
There's no doubt. It's you know, it's I sell two things. That's what I often said for so many years. I sell emotions and memories.
Aww.
That's what music is.
That's true.
If it's new and you like it, it's your emotions. If
right.
it's old, it's your memories.
Right.
That's all music is.
Wow.
And I keep it simple like that
yeah.
because I love all music. I'll listen to Beethoven myself.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's music is designed for the moods that you're in.
That's true.
It's amazing how, because of mass marketing, because of technology, our young people don't know how to use music to calm down.
Really?
Everything is always really? hyped up.
That's true,
think
yeah.
about it. And then, you know, if I'm 14 or 15 and my little brother is 4, 5, or 6 years old, wow, what is he going to be like when he's 15, 16?
Yeah, right.
He's going to be in bad shape. You'll never know how to sit down and relax.
Yeah.
You know, you're eating all that sugar and every darn thing else, and you got music that has you hyped. You know, and again, going back to old-fashioned radio, in the morning is getting ready for school, you turn on WVON and you'd hear gospel
really?
Up in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And then by mid-afternoon, then a certain style, each air personality reflected this music
yeah.
that he would play.
Yeah.
From blues to gospel to jazz, whatever, all on one station.
Wow.
And so you had a soundtrack for your day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just like drive yeah. time radio, what they play during drive time. And
exactly. And now we create playlists on our
exactly.
Spotify and stuff,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, you know, like with the technology, for example, you know, like Spotify is controversial because, you know, you can get any song you want.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying the artists don't get paid
right.
enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now that's another question. But the point is, we now have the biggest jukebox in the world. Every song you ever wanted is available to you. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Don't you think? I mean, and I'm paid for it too. I hope that the artists get it. But,
no, but they're not getting what they used to get.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no. By no means are they getting what they used to get. But
right.
The difference is just like in sports.
Right.
You know, when I was coming up going to see Jackie Robinson, he was not making the money that athletes are making today.
Right.
Right.
You know, when you go back to when James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Frank Sinatra, they weren't making the money that the artists are making today because of other revenue streams.
Exactly. Right. So you know, they have other ways to make money.
Oh, tons of ways. Yeah. The endorsement deals, product lines. I mean, look at Kanye. Look at so many of these other, and those that are progressive.
Do you think he's really $50 million in debt?
No, of course not.
No?
No, but hey, that's like, what do I know?
Right. I'm like, what?
$50 million? I wouldn't care.
That's
about that.
A lot of money.
$50,000? That'd be good.
I
me.
No, yeah. I'm like, how do you go? I don't know.
But again, look how they're able to capitalize. Again, going back to those other days, the music was in America.
Yeah,
you know, wasn't been able to transmit it. You know, unless you took it over there physically to Europe.
That's crazy.
And many of the artists now, you have artists that may have one hit record and it'll last in the rest of their life.
Yeah.
Because it's worldwide.
True. Yeah.
You build a fan base.
That's true.
And, you know, with pop music and hip hop music today, it's incredible. Many of the artists, the old school hip hop artists that you think they're through, are actually working consistently worldwide. Wow. When you go back to the beginning of rap and hip-hop, just like if you go back to the old Motown artists, those that are still alive and healthy enough are still working.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's about that's longevity. True. It's about a body of work.
Yeah.
And it'll keep you going.
Yeah. Yeah? That's cool. When did Berry Gordy found Motown? Do you remember?
Well, I
was
remember
it like in
first
the 60s or something?
I think 58 or 59.
Oh, really?
I think it was it Twist and Shout, their first hit record. I don't know if it was the Isley Brothers, but
they've developed so many R&B artists, you know, for Motown. It's amazing.
Well, I'll tell you, they developed artists that sang soul music. See, there's a difference between R&B and
there
soul.
Is?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely, a definite difference. You can hear it.
R&B is like upbeat, would you say?
No. Aretha Franklin is soul music.
Right.
Wilson Pickett is soul music.
Okay.
I mean, Isaac Hayes and so on. I mean, it was soul music. R&B just became a manufactured genre,
if you will.
Rhythm and blues.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Blues is rhythm. I mean,
right.
But they had, going way back in the day, you know, black music was called race music.
Oh, really?
In radio, yeah. These were the terms that were used to describe the music because it was directly towards the black market.
Yeah.
You know, and see, and when you look at, you know, where does Amy Winehouse get that soul from? Where does Adele get it from? It comes from their parents who were associated through World War II in Europe. With the black soldiers.
Mm. Wow.
That's who introduced the music, the soul music, to Europe.
Wow.
And these people, look, the Beatles,
uh-huh.
That music, because B.B. King said it better. He said the blues had a baby and they called it rock and roll. It was a European artist that came to America and found this music that they loved. The Rolling Stones, their name came from the song that Muddy Waters did called Rolling Stone.
Right.
And Keith Richards still visits that building, 2120 in Michigan Avenue.
Really?
That's the original Chess building, which is a blues museum now.
Uh-huh.
But he still visits.
Wow.
Oh, when they'd come to Chicago and play at a place called the Checkerboard, they would go just, Muddy Waters would be playing. They'll show up and jam with Muddy Waters.
Really?
They love soul music and the blues and what it was. And that's how they
influenced people quite a bit.
Well, it came back rock and roll because if you listen to the lyrics, they took the blues back to London and came back rock and roll.
Really?
Because they were not playing. Just think about it.
Yeah.
The first video MTV ever played.
Right.
Black was Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Mm.
Yeah.
What was going on there? Why wasn't it? Then so Bob Johnson came up with BET.
Yeah.
Dick Clark had American Bandstand.
Right.
Don Cornish came up with Soul Train.
Soul Train and stuff. Yeah, I remember that.
You service the market that's being underserved.
Yeah.
And this is what goes on.
Yeah. See, I feel so fortunate having grown up in the 70s because it seems like everything happened in the 70s.
As far as music,
you know.
Very
productive period.
And you had, positive music. You know, Philly International with Gamble and Huff. those two guys wrote some of the greatest songs for Teddy Pendergrass, Billy Paul, the OJs, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, Teddy Pendergrass.
Really? They wrote all these songs?
Patti LaBelle, yes. And all of it, you remember McFadden and Whitehead?
Yes.
Ain't no stop.
It's a bit of snow. Yeah, that was the disco era.
And that's out of Philadelphia. All right. Of that great music. These two guys, but all of their music was inspirational and motivational. Right. You can. They have a catalog of songs they've written that've been major hits. Everything is uplifting.
Nowadays, everything. Oh my gosh, every other word is like that, beep beep.
That's
beep.
Exactly. See, so you know, you hear certain songs like Pharrell when he did "Happy."
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's a song that a Gamble and Huff would endorse. Or Curtis Mayfield would endorse.
Really?
Oh yeah, because they were uplifting songs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the soundtrack of Obama's campaign. Uh-huh. It's the soundtrack of the civil rights movement.
Really?
The Impressions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
keep
interesting.
Keep on moving, you know.
Yeah.
Keep on pushing. There were songs that related to the civil rights movement of the 60s.
Yeah, it was probably an outlet for people to express themselves.
Well, to tell a story of what was going on. And it's amazing today, if you put on Marvin Gaye's What's Going On?
Uh-huh.
And he wrote that and did that album years ago. Everything he's talking about in that song way back then is happening right now.
Really?
Oh, it's about the drugs. It's about war. It's about all of those things.
Wow.
It's about discrimination. It's amazing. And then there was a backlash that Motown went through because they were, you know, the sound of young America and the, you know, pop radio stations. Many people didn't know most of those artists were black. Because the music was just so
really
strong. Yeah, but then when they had controversial songs come out, like The Temptations, The Ball of Confusion, Cloud Nine, and you know, which was dealing about the drug problem.
Oh.
You know, when Edwin Starr did War, What
Is
It Good
I've
For?
Heard that song, yeah.
And all the, and see, these were the songs. James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. See, these, it was part of a movement. So listen to the music now.
Yeah.
What are they talking about? They're just adding to the problem.
Right.
There's nobody out there singing about put the guns down. No. They're rapping about pick the guns up.
Yeah.
And see,
that's
so
true.
And this is what you have as a reflection of the music of the times. It's describing what's going on now.
Yeah. That's a cool thing to do it. And today's music is about who knows what it's about.
It's about I. I got the car, I got the jewelry, I got the chicks, I
know.
That's all it's
Well,
about.
Now that we cut down the entire current generation.
Exactly.
Yeah. George Daniels from Chicago. How can people find you if they want to? Do you have use social networks at all?
No, I don't want to be found. No,
okay. So, but people can see you in barbershop for a split second.
Yeah.
And or go to your record store. So you have one left in the airport.
In the airport in Chicago. Uh-huh. Yeah, in Midway Airport. You can just you can Google my name.
Yeah,
there you go.
George Daniels of Chicago or something like that, and you'll be surprised.
There you go.
I looked the other day and realized all that stuff was there that I didn't put.
Oh my god!
But it's there. But it's cool.
Yeah.
No privacy anymore. We might as well get over it. Right?
You got that right.
All right, George. Thank you for joining us.
Have
a safe trip back.
Thank you.
And you're welcome back anytime.
I'd be glad to come back.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for the hospitality.
Yeah, and Drew, you noticed never made it back into the studio because he didn't want to talk. I told him you'd have to talk.
He was like, later.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kelsey, thank you as always for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.